Welcome to Side 6 of the 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication with your host, Ronnie Moore. On this side, we'll investigate the easily avoidable sin of sloppy communication. With the demands of our jobs, our busy schedules, and need-it-yesterday deadlines, we all make mistakes. Perhaps you'll be able to identify with Taylor, the warehouse manager, in this scene, as he hurries to send out a memo scheduling a very important upcoming meeting.
Later, after Taylor posts the memo in the break room, Dylan takes a closer look at it.
Wait a minute, the 21st is on Tuesday.
What?
Well, it says here that Taylor's big meeting is on Wednesday the 21st, but Wednesday's the 22nd.
Well, if Taylor says it's the 21st, I'm sure he means it's on the 21st.
Yeah, but he also says Wednesday. I think we should call him.
Oh, yeah, like Taylor loves to hear about his mistakes. You call him.
No, he probably just meant the 21st. He probably just got the day wrong.
Yeah, the 21st.
Yeah, 21st. All right, see you.
21st.
On Wednesday the 22nd, Taylor bounds into the meeting room because he meant Wednesday. He just got Wednesday's date wrong in the memo.
Good afternoon, people.
But the room is empty. As humans, we're flawed. Like Taylor, we make mistakes. We're under a lot of stress. We never have enough time to do what we need to do, and often all of that results in errors, in sloppiness, in lack of consistency that reflects negatively on us, on our organization. Some examples of sloppy communication. Simple errors that alter the communication. Again, as with Taylor in the vignette, a common error is when you get a meeting notification and it says, "Come to the meeting on Wednesday, January 21st. But the problem is that the 21st is a Tuesday. And that simple little error, that simple little misstrike, and the lack of time or skill to find that error before it goes out can alter the message and really cause sloppiness, problems, delays, frustration, and time wasting. And we're not even talking here about major grammar mistakes or the need to go back to school and brush up on all the punctuation and grammar we forgot a long time ago. We're talking about typos, misstrikes, and the inability or the lack of skill to find them. One of my students gave me a great example of a sloppy communication. Not in the workplace, but it's a great example. She sent out 250 invitations for her daughter's wedding. On the front of the invitation, the usual wording is something like, "We request the honor of your presence at our daughter's wedding." The problem was that whoever typed it or keyed it in typed presence spelled P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S. Now, obviously, spell check doesn't find that. In fact, spell check would not have found the mistake with the meeting on Wednesday, the 21st, because spell check is limited. It doesn't find mistakes that still flag as words. It doesn't know numbers. Spell check doesn't have a brain. So when that invitation went out, "We request the honor of your presence at our daughter's wedding," P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, basically what the message said was, "Send the money and stay home." That's a clear example of a sloppy and embarrassing mistake. Another example of sloppy communication is when we communicate important information only once. Remember again, we're dealing in the workplace with very busy people, with too much to do and not enough time to do it. Calendars that are bursting at the seams. So we send them a notice or a memo that says, "There'll be an important meeting in 3 weeks." We give the day, the date, the time, and even if we give the right day of the week with the right time and the right date, and there's no confusion, we send it out via email or fax and we hope for the best. And then we wonder why people don't show up, or they're late, or they forget. One of the things that's very helpful to ask yourself is, how important is this information? And the scale that I use is as follows. If it's something that just needs to be said for your information, important but certainly nothing that needs another reminder, I send it out once. If I'm inviting people to a meeting or training or to something where I have to have them come, where it's mandatory, where I need to count numbers, have coffee or seats ready. In other words, it's important that the people I think will be coming are coming. Then I might send out that email or a fax 3 or 4 weeks before, but then a week before, I'll call them or email or fax them again. I think that sometimes we worry about making pests of ourselves, but I'd rather spend a few minutes reminding people than hoping, assuming that they'll show up, and they don't. Or there's confusion because I communicated this critical information only once, and that leads to another form of sloppy communication. When we don't follow up verbal communication, such as the communication at a meeting or a discussion, if we make a serious commitment or we change an agenda, it's critical that we follow that verbal communication, that meeting, that discussion, with written communication that confirms what was said, what was agreed to. When we don't follow up, or when we follow up with written communication that has discrepancies between what was said and what is now written, we have sloppy communication. What should the readers believe? What was said or what was written? But it's important to make sure that written communication goes out, because at least if there's a discrepancy, that discrepancy can be clarified immediately rather than having time go by with no follow-up and with people operating under different conceptions of what happened during that discussion. Another form of sloppy communication is not communicating changes of plan with everyone who needs to know about those changes. If you're going to change the date of a trade show, the date of an employee event, if you're going to change a salary structure, anything that's going to be changed should be communicated to everyone who is affected by that change. We're also sloppy when we tell different things to different people, or we forget to tell someone who needs to know. Remember that communication, in the workplace especially, is often a multi-person event. Make sure that whether you're writing or you're speaking, you communicate so everyone who needs to know knows, and that you're clear as to day, date, and time. How do you get someone else to avoid sloppiness in communication? One way is to have those regular meetings, those relationship management sessions that we covered in Sin 2, Confrontation Phobia. It's important that communication is made a regular, natural part of the workplace. And even if your profession is not communication, whether you're an engineer, an accountant, or a receptionist, understand that when we work with people, we must communicate with them. And when we have those relationship management sessions on a weekly, monthly, or quarterly basis, there's far less likelihood for things to slip through the cracks, for sloppiness to occur. Assign responsibility and accountability to people. One of the mistakes we make that often results in sloppiness is that we will give people things to do, or if we're coordinating different parts of a proposal to send out, we'll ask engineering to give us a blueprint, we'll ask accounting or finance to give us the numbers, we'll ask research to give us the background, and then we have to put it all together and send it out. We take contributions or parts from different people who are responsible for those parts, yet we don't make them accountable for those parts. Here's what I mean. If you have several people giving you information for a report or proposal, have them sign off on their parts. This is a way to ensure that the information they give you is correct, that it's been checked, that it's accurate and ready to go. I have a stamp that says, okay to print, and if somebody gives information to me, I stamp it, okay to print, and then I ask the person for a signature. The first time you do this, you will be amazed that people will pull the information, the document, out of your hands and say something like, I'm just going to take one more look at this and run the numbers one more time. Or, let me just have it one more time, just for another few minutes. And let me make some calls, make sure this is correct. When we ask people to initial or sign that the information they're giving us is correct, we're no longer just making them responsible, we are now making them accountable. If we do not make people accountable for what they give us, there's a big chance of sloppiness because they're counting on us to make it right. When people put their names to something, they're far more likely to make sure that it's right, to do another proofreading, to make another phone call, to run the numbers just one more time. And even if you don't have a stamp, write okay to print and ask for the signature anyway. Another way that you can prevent sloppiness in someone else's communication is to teach and encourage good proofreading skills. Send your staff to proofreading training. Make this a high priority in your office. It's interesting. Often organizations think of proofreading as a low-level job. Anybody can do it. People try proofing while they're sitting at a signal in their car waiting for the light to change. Or they proofread while they're eating a tuna sandwich. It's important to know here that an organization benefits when its people have good skills, good proofreading skills that allow them to find mistakes, often embarrassing and potentially costly mistakes, before a document goes out, not when it's too late. If you're planning a long document, something that's going to take several days, weeks, or months to do, such as a proposal or an important report, when you're building in the time frames, when you're looking at a production schedule for the annual report or for the proposal, think not only about the writing time and the artwork and the printer, build in time to proofread it. Build in time to find and fix mistakes that, if not found, could cause you, your organization, your department harm. Put a high value in your organization on attention to detail. Point out what embarrassing and costly mistakes can do to an organization's credibility and bottom line. And if someone gives you something that is inconsistent, sloppy, point those things out. Point out the inconsistencies, and again, express the desire to have error-free, clean, correct, not sloppy communication in your organization. Now let's go back to Dylan, Alice, and Taylor. Notice how Dylan helps Taylor rectify the sloppiness and confusion caused by Taylor's memo.
Oh, look, the 21st of February is on a Wednesday. Do you think he was looking at the wrong page on his calendar?
Could be.
No way. This is the big meeting Taylor's been planning for a week now. There's no way he'd put it off that long.
Well, we can go on both days.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to call him.
Why? You call him.
All right. I'll call him. It's no big deal, really. Hey, Taylor, it's Dylan. Yeah, I noticed on the memo for the meeting next week that it says it's on Wednesday, the 21st.
Thanks to Dylan's helpful phone call, Taylor was able to rectify his sloppy communication by correcting the date of the meeting in a new memo he posts in the break room.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Taylor.
All right.
I'll let everyone know.
Okay. Hey, Mel, how are you doing?
How are you?
That's all it takes sometimes. People want to know when they've been responsible for sloppy communication. By calling Taylor, Dylan allowed him to quickly do a new memo containing the right information. Think about Deadliest Sin number 7, sloppy communication. Think about when it's me. How can you avoid being sloppy in your communication? One way is to use good planning techniques. Think about what you want to say and what you want to write before you say it or write it. Again, think about getting away from the off-the-top-of-the-head type of communication. The second way is to use your voicemail, your audio messenger. Use it in a way that helps you remind yourself of what you need to communicate. I leave messages to myself, from myself, all the time, so that if 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night after my workday, if something comes to me that I need to remember, I'll call my voicemail and tell myself what I need to do at 7 or 8 in the morning when I start my day, so that when the day starts, I don't forget. Often when I come into the office in the morning, there'll be 3 or 4 messages to me, from me, but at least they've not been forgotten. Always follow up in writing anything that was discussed verbally, anything with any importance, with specific dates or actions. You have a discussion or a meeting, follow up a paragraph or two for any telephone call that you have or any meeting that you have with anything important that must be done as a result of that telephone call, meeting, or discussion. The 5 or 10 minutes you take to follow it up in writing may make all the difference in the world and alleviate confusion and misunderstanding down the road. And of course, proofread ruthlessly and effectively to ensure consistency and correctness in anything that you write. Here are 3 proofreading tips that will help you find and fix mistakes before they go out and result in sloppy and embarrassing communication. And share this with other people in your life as well. Proofreading tip number 1. Use a multi-sensory approach to proofreading. Generally, when we sit down to proofread or correct a document, we rely only on one sense. That's our sense of sight. We expect to be able to just look at the text and find all of the possible mistakes that we made, when in fact, some of the mistakes we made are not likely to be found by simply looking at the text. Good proofreading means practicing a process called look, listen, and touch. Plan on proofreading or checking a document 3 times. When you have the time to do it right, proofread it 3 times. The first time you proofread or check the document for errors, look at it, read it. Probably the way you're looking at it or proofreading it now. Read it to yourself using your eyes. Read it silently, the way your reader will read it. Any mistake you find, flag it. And you will find some mistakes by just looking at the document. The second time you proofread or check for errors, now add the sense of listening or your hearing. Listen to the text. Say the text out loud while you look at it. The reason that this will help you find more mistakes is that there are some mistakes that your tired eyes may not find that your ears might hear. 2 examples. One example of a mistake you're more likely to hear is a punctuation mistake. You're more likely to hear the need for a pause, such as a comma, or a stop, such as a period, than you are to see it. You're also more likely to hear a typo, a misstrike that results in a mistake that spell check won't find and your tired eyes might not see. Some examples. Have you ever typed in for it, as for of, on for the? Have you ever left a little word out? Recently, I visited a well-known theme park. As I walked through the gate, I was handed the visitor's information and event brochure. On the bottom, in large type, was a warning to all guests that should have read, "Smoking is not allowed anywhere in the park." The problem? What it said was, "Smoking is allowed anywhere in the park." Someone had left the word "not" out of the warning. Spell check cannot find a word that's not there, and spell check doesn't tell you that in should be it or as should be of, because spell check flags all of these as words, as correct. Another example from the Reader's Digest. A man was audited by the IRS, and he had to write a letter of explanation about a deduction that the IRS felt was questionable. In his letter of explanation, the man typed the following sentence. That deduction is explained on lie 12. He typed L-I-E 12. Now, I assume he meant line 12, L-I-N-E. It's easy to see that in a hurry, he just left out the N in line. But now he's telling the auditor at the IRS that his explanation was on lie 12. Clearly, that man did not want to send that letter to the auditor at the IRS. Your ears will hear these kinds of mistakes even if your tired eyes don't find them. Your tired eyes don't find all the mistakes because your tired eyes aren't looking at every word. When you read or proofread, you generally don't look at every word. You read in groups or clusters of words, particularly when the information is familiar to you. Your brain tends to move you ahead, skipping words because your brain is anticipating the meaning it believes is coming. So if you think about it logically, how can you find all the mistakes in the words if you're not looking at every word to begin with? And even if your eyes did graze for a half second at the word lie for line, or even if your eye glanced at it for is, understand that often your eyes and brain register what they meant to say and not necessarily what you did say. The third time you proof or check the document, now you add the third sense. Now you add your sense of touch. You go through the document and you touch each word. You can go quickly, but you point and pop each word out to your eyes. This makes each word an individual window taken out or popped out of the text in which it's buried. Now your eyes can easily go inside of each word where many mistakes live. Some mistakes, such as spelling, typos, reversals, they live inside. They're embedded in the interior of the word. And the best way to find them is to pop that word out of where it's buried in that text, forcing your eyes inside the word. Have you ever looked at a word that spell check pointed out to you as an error? You had proofed the document 6 times without spell check, and everything looked fine, you thought. But as soon as spell check pointed or popped that word out to your eyes in isolation, your eyes went inside, and there the mistake was as clear as a bell. Yet buried in the text, your eyes either didn't look at the word or glazed right over it, registering what you meant and not what you said. By pointing and popping words out to your eyes as individual windows, by touching words, you will find mistakes embedded in those words. This multisensory approach works like a checks and balances system. What your tired eyes don't see, your ears might hear. What your ears don't hear, your finger might touch. And if you have time, if there's a lot riding on this important document, not only should you touch it the third time you check, touch the words going backwards. This means that you start not at the first word, but at the last word, and you touch each word going backwards from the last word to the first word. The reason that this makes you even more efficient is that when you go backwards, the document becomes nonsensical. There's nothing for your brain to anticipate or skip, because going backwards, there's nothing to anticipate. This forces you to slow down just enough to make sure you touch each word, point, pop, and go inside with your eyes to find those mistakes. Now, when you don't have time to do three thorough readings, then check or proofread the document only once, but you can still use all three senses. You just integrate them. If you've ever seen a six-year-old learning to read, you know that a little child will sit with the reader with that book, and as the child reads, the child will look at the words, the child will touch the words, and the child will say the words out loud, because this child needs three senses, because a six-year-old is not sure yet and needs to point, listen, and look. That helps the child know what he or she is reading. As proofreaders, we need to be as uncertain as a six-year-old. The same skills that make us great readers, the ability to skip, to go quickly, those are things that often get us in trouble when we try to proofread. We need to slow down. We need to be as uncertain as a child, because we don't know what's there. We know what we meant, but we don't know what's on that paper or on that screen. So when time does not allow three separate readings, look, listen, and touch at the same time in one proofreading. You won't be able to go backwards because you have only one shot, but you can still look at it, listen to it, and touch it all at the same time. What about those days when you have no or virtually no time and you know that you don't have time for even one thorough proofreading? You have virtually no time to proofread when the Federal Express or UPS carrier is on the way. You have 3 or 4 minutes and the document is out of here. On those days, what you need to do is practice proofreading damage control and teach this to everyone with whom you must work. Proofreading damage control is for those days when you know you cannot do a thorough proofreading. So you spend whatever precious moments you do have finding and fixing the mistakes that, if not found, could cause you or your organization the most harm. Those mistakes are names and numbers. You see, if you send out a letter or a proposal and you forget a comma, or you use the word affect instead of effect, or less instead of fewer, that's not good. But it's probably not as damaging to your image, to your credibility, to your bottom line, as typing the wrong price, the wrong address, the wrong phone number, or spelling the person's name wrong. Your reader will forgive a missing comma or the misspelling of an unimportant word far more quickly than he or she will forgive the misspelling of one's name. We're funny about our names. Mistakes in numbers, giving the wrong price, sending it to the wrong address, or, as you heard in the vignette, giving the wrong date or confusing dates for a meeting. Those kinds of mistakes have potentially more damaging consequences, and therefore, when we have limited time, we need to spend that time finding and fixing the mistakes that could cause us the most harm. How do you do it? You do something called the rapid scan. You take your paper, or if on the screen, you run your finger line by line from the beginning to the end of the text, and you rapidly scan line by line, and you stop for nothing except a name or a number. When you find a name or a number, you spend whatever precious seconds you have making sure that the name is right, the address is right, the phone number is right, the price is right. Because you know what? If it doesn't get to the place it's going, it doesn't matter how good it is. If you quote the wrong price and then you're liable for that price, that error could have serious consequences to your bottom line. If you misspell a person's name or call a woman Mr. or a man Ms., that could have serious consequences, especially if you're asking that person for money or a job or you're trying to look especially professional. So the first proofreading tip is use a multisensory approach to proofreading, meaning always use your ears, your eyes, and your touch. Look, listen, and touch, whether you do it in three thorough readings or in one integrated reading. The second proofreading tip is to practice proofreading damage control. When you have time for nothing else, check out those names and numbers. If you have time to do a regular proofreading, be it in one or three readings, then always do the rapid scan after everything else, because it never hurts to double-check those names and numbers. The third proofreading tip that will help you find more mistakes will help you when you're proofreading something that's close to you, something you've been looking at for too long. You know that it's easier to find mistakes in someone else's writing than it is to find them in your own. And that's because when we're looking at something we're close to, once again, we see what we meant, not necessarily what we said. So change the way familiar text looks to your tired, non-objective eyes. Here's how. If you're proofreading on a computer screen, which is tough on the eyes anyway, before you apply the look, listen, and touch method, before you do the rapid scan, remember that this is familiar text. So before you proofread it, change the background colors on the screen. Go from blue and white to red and yellow. Change the spacing. Go from single space to double space. You'll put it back. If you have a 10-space margin on each side, change it to a 30-space margin and make it look more like a column. Again, you'll change it back. Change the font. Change the color. Change the texture. Change the background on which familiar text sits on your screen before you apply your proofreading techniques. You give your eyes almost like a caffeine jolt, a wake-up call, and you trick your eyes and your brain into thinking they're looking at something new, so that when you do focus on that text, because the text looks different from the way it's looked for hours, minutes, days, or weeks, your eyes and brain attend to it more objectively, the way someone else could look at your text and find more mistakes because that person hasn't been looking at it for so long. If you're printing the document out on paper, that makes it easier to proofread, but before you do, can you print out on a different color? Different than the white paper we look at all day long. Many resume writing classes will teach you that if you are sending a resume out to answer a classified ad, and that resume and cover letter will hit someone's desk and be surrounded by 40 or 50 other resumes and letters, that instead of using the traditional white, find a different color. A professional color, an ivory or a beige or a yellow, something different from the white, because that's going to stand out and draw the eyes to it. Well, the same thing happens here. You look at white all day long. If you can print out text to proofread, instead of using the normal white paper, use a light color. Put familiar text on a different color piece of paper, something you haven't been looking at all day long, and then apply your proofreading techniques, such as look, listen, and touch. Again, the eyes will go to that new color and will be drawn to that color in a new way. You'll be tricked into thinking you're looking at something new. Use these three proofreading techniques. Practice multisensory or look, listen, and touch proofreading. When time is tight, practice proofreading damage control. Look for names and numbers, even if you have no time to look for anything else. If you do have time, always do a double check for names and numbers after you look, listen, and touch, because those mistakes have potentially damaging results. And finally, change the way familiar text looks before you try to proofread it, either on the screen or on the paper. Let's join Taylor, stuck in traffic, using his car phone to ward off sloppy communication.
Hi, me. Memo to myself. Don't forget, you need to reschedule that action plan meeting. Try to make it Monday or Tuesday of next week. And this time, remember to double-check the calendar.
Later in his office, Taylor manages clearer, cleaner communication by using the proofreading techniques we've just discussed. While on the computer, Taylor reads the memo out loud. He touches the words on the screen, word by word. This time, there's no confusion. He walks into the conference room to be greeted by his team.
Oops. That should be a two. Okay. Memo. Pilot Action Team, January 19th, 1997, to Dylan, Alice, Teresa, Mel, Janice, Graham. Our first Pilot Action Team meeting will be in the second floor conference room on Tuesday, January 21st, between 2 and 4 p.m. Look forward to seeing you there. Okay. Oh, wait a second. It's the wrong there. T-H-E-R-E. Okay. Tuesday, January 1st. Second floor. 2 to 4. 2 to 4. First by ice. First 2. Perfect.
Good afternoon, people.
Hi.
Well, I'm glad everybody could make it here. How are you doing, Mel? Nice to see you. Okay, a few things I have here that I want to make sure that we go over.
Much better. Let's take a closer look at what Taylor did. He left himself a message reminding himself about the memo. Later, in his office, he proofed his message by picking up where his spell check left off. He said the text out loud, he touched the words, and he did a rapid scan to double-check for name or number mistakes. Mistakes he definitely did not want to make. And it paid off. The meeting started on time, in the right place, with all of the right people. Is sloppy communication a sin for you or for someone else in your life? How will you deal with this communication sin in the future? Will you put a high value on attention to detail in your organization? Will you practice and use these proofreading techniques to catch possibly damaging mistakes? Think about how you'll put your new skills to the test.
This concludes Side 6. The 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication will continue on Side 7 as Ronnie Moore discusses the next common workplace sin, stealth communication. Thanks for listening.